That's the power of a startup. That's why you fund young businesses. That's why you get behind people who are innovative and creative, but are actually action-oriented and are going to do things, because this is how we change the world. This is how we make beautiful things.
Hey, friend. It's David Nabinsky here in New York City. So excited for this podcast with Katie Hunt. Katie's currently the co-founder of Schofields, which has been named the most interesting store in the world. And she's also the co-founder of The Fund, which is a early stage investment firm based here in New York City. As you can see, I'm inspired by how Katie has been able to be the co-founder of two incredible organizations and communities. Before this, she was the third employee at Warby Parker and also was an independent consultant for about 8 years, and sometimes even working with four startups at a time. There is incredible gems in this conversation about how to market yourself, how to pick projects, how to find your superpower, and so much more. And there's also incredible lessons around how the Katie and Schofields have been forced to pivot during this time. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There, you can also subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Katie. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess one place I want to start, Katie, is paid extra.
Yeah, my first career. I mean, that's where all the magic happens. I was a professional extra in New York for 3 years when I moved here. I had graduated with a theater degree from Brown, and I had these grand ideas of coming to New York and one day running the theater and, you know, being in Shakespeare in the Park. And Oscar Eustace, who's now the head of the public theater, was one of my professors at Brown. And I fell in love with this idea of theater and art and the art scene in New York. But when I moved to New York, it was definitely a little bit different. I became a full-time extra on such TV shows as Gossip Girl, All My Children, and Ugly Betty. And that's how I paid the rent for the first few years. Mm-hmm. So very different than the public theater and Shakespeare in the Park. A lot of walking around in the background.
Mm-hmm. And then saw an amazing opportunity with Warby Parker and the third employee there. And it seems like spotting opportunities and spotting amazing people and kind of inflection points and stuff has been definitely a part of the journey.
I think the smartest person in the room is always the person who realizes that they're not the smartest person in the room, and they surround themselves by people that are doing amazing things. I wouldn't say that I have necessarily always picked the winners. There's definitely some companies on my resume that are not huge successes, but I think I had my first kind of taste of startups by chance and by luck with Warby Parker, and seeing how they ran the team and seeing sort of how they taught each of us, the books that they gave us, the way that they, you know, led by saying there is no solid answer. You are creative problem solvers. You have to figure it out. I think I've always looked for that in the leadership that I've joined since then. And I think it was a huge privilege to get to see it in action. I mean, clearly Warby is a very big success, but I also think that they've created an incredible environment for people to grow and grow into, you know, other people within the ecosystem of startups as well.
Mm-hmm. And I obviously want to talk about what you're up to now with Schofields and the Fund. And it's fascinating to me of how, you know, being a founder of two amazing companies and communities, etc. But before the Schofields and the Fund, you were also kind of an independent strategist for a while, right? And consultant and stuff. And I know a lot of people are trying to sell their own skills and stuff like that. And you did it for 8 years. What would you say to kind of that independent consultant advisor out there?
I would say figure out what your superpower is. I think that there are a lot of incredibly smart people out there that can do a lot of beautiful things. But the thing that's going to get you in the door is really going to be selling yourself on the one thing that you're very, very good at, and then getting in and getting to work on a lot of different projects with companies and with founders and with, you know, other things that you want to do. But I think what happens a lot of times, and I'm finding it now as we hire external consultants, is that you meet these people and they are so great and they do 100 amazing things, and you're kind of in your day-to-day and it's hard for you to maybe think of the project or think of the thing that would be best to do with that particular person. And so sometimes it gets pushed to sort of one side so you can focus on the other things you need to do. But when someone comes and pitches me and says, I think you have a problem with X, and I think the solution is Y, and I'm the person who can do it, I'm very, very quick to push the button on working with that person. So be very clear about the thing that you can do better than anyone else and pitch that, and pitch it in the context of that company.
I can imagine it changed a little bit, or your messaging or your pitching and stuff, it changed a little bit through the kind of the 8 years. How did maybe... talk through some of the highs and some of the lows of that journey.
I mean, I definitely went out there guns blazing and tried to get anyone and everyone to work with me. I worked across 32 companies in that time period, which was a lot. And I think I was at first probably not as selective about the companies that I was working with. I just wanted to work. I just wanted to learn. But what I started doing, which I think really transitioned it into something that was valuable, was that I started looking on Crunchbase and AngelList. And when someone would complete their A or their B round, I kind of knew that at that point they had some people out there that had a belief in what they were building, that they had momentum, that maybe they had a little bit of proof of concept. And that became sort of my sweet spot of like, okay, proof of concept, but now how do you scale? Because if you really think about it, nobody understands how to do that, right? It's always a strategy and it's always a changing strategy. The target changes, the world changes, 20 people come before and do it X way. And so you think you have to do it that way, but in reality, you have to reinvent strategy every single time. And so I found that to be my sweet spot of like, okay, there's something here, there's some magic, and I want to come in and explode that magic into a lot of different new channels. And I think when I realized that that's what I liked doing, it made it a lot easier for me to go out and pitch, because I knew the inflection point of that company, and I knew exactly when to kind of target talking to them.
And you were working with like 3 or 4 or 5 at a time, right?
Yeah, I was working with up to 4 at a time, either as like a co-founder for hire or chief strategist. And then I fell in love with Hinge at the time. It was a product very similar to Tinder, had incredible founder Justin, an incredible team, but they had proof of concept in that they knew they had a market, they had an audience, but they hadn't quite knocked the product out of the park yet, right? They needed a new concept. It felt a little too similar to the swiping concept of Tinder. And so I started off as a consultant for them, but then I started not being able to sleep and like showing up at their offices, even when we didn't have projects, and being like, hey guys, like thought we would, talk about like this. And they were like, all right, Katie, like, do you want to work on this? And so I had the amazing privilege of coming in with the Hinge team and getting to help create an entirely new product, but to do it with a captive audience. So we released 9 betas over the course of a year, and then we released their now product and they got acquired by Match. But it was a really fun journey to kind of see from start to finish what works with a group, like how far out do you have to make a concept? What in a focus group are people going to tell you that's actually not real when you go to make something? It was a definite amazing learning experience. And so that led me to going in-house again for a year with them and, you know, creating that product and that brand, which was super exciting.
And now you kind of, it's interesting as like you providing capital through the fund kind of create that inflection point for companies. And then going back to the independent consultant, what are some kind of emerging roles or that you're seeing with some of these companies that you're investing into these days that people could potentially pitch?
Sure. So I actually think the best thing about consulting is it is dating. You are dating a team of founders, you are dating a company culture, and then you are using that dating data to understand if this is the team that you would ultimately want to work for. So I think it's a double-sided relationship, right? You're offering, you know, a real skill set, but you should always be coming in knowing that if you did end up staying, what would be the role that you would want to go into, right? So if you see that a company has an incredible technical team, but maybe not a great, you know, marketing and branding team yet, and you could see yourself as a CMO of that company, that's a great company to pitch a consultancy gig to go to and say, hey, like, I actually believe that I can help reinvigorate and create strategy around your social and your go-to-market in these two markets. And I think here's where you should, you know, be putting your money for ad spend. And I would love to be the person who helps you create that equation for success. And then, you know that if you're happy, like, there could be a great role for you in that particular space. If you're noticing a deficit in the team when you look at who's working there, like, that's most likely what a company is going to use their A or their B round to hire. So if you eventually want to potentially work in that company or in that sector, it's a great time to pitch like a project, because most likely, like, it allows the team to get comfortable with you as well. And I think it's one of the more challenging things, right? Hiring for founders, finding and evaluating talent, and you have to do it in this vacuum, right? Where you spend like a couple of hours with someone and you hire them into one of the most important, you know, roles within your company, especially at a C-level role or a manager role where they're going to be taking on potentially other teammates that you've already hired and trained and you love and you want them to be happy. So I actually think that doing projects is a way for both sides of the table to understand if it's a fit. And so I always, when I was consulting, used to look for companies that had marketing and branding deficits, but great products, because I love branding and I love marketing and I love getting the word out about something and getting creative in that way, but using data to do it. And so I used to be like, this product is great, this brand is terrible, I'm going to pitch them. And then the first project would always be brand book. I'd be like, let's make a brand book. Let's make this mission driven. Let's do something bigger with this incredible thing that you've already built. And it was just taking someone's beautiful idea and giving it the words and the images and the other things around it that it needed to get consumption.
I love this, how you're also talking about this idea of like pitching projects, you know, that's up to you, you know, the opportunities out there. And also to the fact around it's dating and it's a relationship and it's evolving and stuff. And it's a fluid process and you get to make it what you want. And clearly you've been able to make some magic happen. And then correct me wrong, then you kind of left, then you started the fund, or you started investing into founders and into companies. How did you start working with Schofields?
Sure. So the fund really came out of an idea that there's kind of an old joke, right? That in San Francisco, every time someone sells a company, 10 other companies get created. And in New York, every time someone sells a company, a house in Montauk gets purchased. And so New York really needed to reinvest in its own ecosystem. And not just because like it should be a place where people are coming to start companies and to hire talent, and there should be sort of an ecosystem and a heartbeat there within the startup world. But because even if you are, you know, further along in your career and potentially have founded a successful business within New York, you're going to need to hire talent from within the talent pool of New York City. And if there aren't any other startups being made and people aren't cutting their teeth on other companies before they meet you, the talent pool becomes really small in a ecosystem as well. So the fund really came out of a beautiful idea that was not mine, but I got on board behind, which was this idea that if we invest into the ecosystem of New York, that many companies would be founded there and it would be a healthy ecosystem for all. So myself and my co-founders raised money from 80 different founders in New York, and we created the first fund, which was called The Fund. And now we have The Fund New York, The Fund LA, The Fund London. So many, many, many different people from different ecosystems all in one Slack channel, and we run the entire fund from that Slack channel. I can take no credit for running Fund 2. That is Jenny Fielding and Scott Hartley right now. I get to do the fun things of popping in and seeing what everybody's working on at the moment, because we all rotate through the investment committee, but they're doing an incredible job. We have our company-wide hangout today. It's hundreds of people from all over the world who've either recently built a company that we've funded or have invested as an LP and a former or current founder into the fund. So it's a really fun community. Clearly I'm bad at it, at being a VC, because the first company that pitched the fund when we opened was Schofields. I met Tal, one of my co-founders, and Amir, my other co-founder, and I was so sold on their idea that I asked if I could work with them. So I then leaned in so far, I became their co-founder. I think you're not supposed to do that when you're giving people capital. But it was just such a beautiful idea, and they were so brilliant and so smart, and I wanted to work with them so much that I feel very lucky that they let me join in on this crazy adventure with them.
And you called them and said you wanted to work with them?
Yeah. I called and I said, well, we're not going to invest, but I really want to work with you guys. And they were like, okay. And then I pitched them on a sales project. And, you know, 6 months later, I joined full time as their co-founder. And this was after I said I was never going in-house again. I was exhausted. I was going to take some time and just run the funds. But clearly, when you see something that big and that beautiful, it's really hard to not lean fully into it. I mean, when else in your career does someone say to you, like, I've got a building and I've got people that have given us money to fill that building with art and brands and build a slide and like host parties and events and change the future of retail, and we want you to be part of that. Like, yes, like the only answer is yes. You've met Paul, you know, he's a salesman, he sold me.
And I love how you said it also of like flipping the script, right? There's norms, and then there's like, what does my heart feel like? What is my, you know, what is my intuition? And your intuition was saying, I've got to work on this. And you'd been working with all these brands and you could probably envision them all being in the store.
Yeah. And I mean, I knew, like, I also just saw how meaningful retail can actually fundamentally be for a business and how expensive it normally is to learn that, right? Like, you have to go open your own store, you have to run it, you have to hire all this entire team and staff, and you have to design it. And it's a huge undertaking. And I really think what Schofields has fundamentally done is it's allowed younger companies to really fully understand retail, have the opportunity to do it, acquire a ton of customers, and do it at a fraction of the cost, right? Like, you know, Schofields, when it really started, was just retail as a service. It was this idea that making, you know, opening a store as easy as opening a website for, you know, a digital brand. I think we've evolved past that to really be a discovery platform now. And, you know, I really think of Schofields as not only making it easier for those things to happen, but, you know, being a curator and really curating beautiful, mission-driven, innovative brands and then introducing them to an audience. But I think when we really started, it was this idea that we could just make retail a lot easier, which is the most naive concept in the entire world. Now that I've done retail and I realize how hard it is, I think most things are born out of being naive and thinking, oh, I'll fix it, I'll make it better. And then you get in there and you're like, oh my gosh, this is a monster. I don't know what I took on, but I'm glad that I was naive. I'm glad I took it on. It's been a wonderful challenge for the entire team. And I love the innovation that's happening right now in the retail sector.
Mm-hmm. And also you've been able, been forced to adapt. And so you've been adapting and evolving and stuff, but also I think I heard the team has been evolving a lot too. People that used to be event producers are now building the website. Talk to me a little bit about how that process works. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, that's not my job, or, you know, or my boss doesn't give me trust into, you know, experimenting on something that's so meaningful. Maybe talk to us a little bit what that's like.
I think you join a team, you don't join an idea. So like when you join a startup, be very sure that this is the team you want to go to war with. Like these are the people that you want to, in the worst moments, look to your left and right and be like, I'm glad you're in the boat with me. So, I mean, a great startup, the reason it has an advantage over a corporation that's a larger size is its ability to adapt and change based on environment. And so its ability to be like, this is what's happening in the world, and we are immediately reactive to it, versus we're a big organization. It's very hard for us to change the direction of the ship. So you fall in love with the team. And for me, like, I feel very fortunate that the people that are on my team and are fighting this fight with me are so innovative. And they are these tinkerers who always want to launch new products and try new things. And like, they're looking to do that at any given time anyway. So when this happened, right, when COVID hit and we shut our doors, there was definitely this horrible moment of like, oh my God, we're physical retail. What are we going to do? We don't have physical anymore. And then 3 weeks later, the team launched live video shopping. And yes, our event producer, who is one of the most badass people I've ever met in my life, who's also named Katie, which I also love, you know, went from running the events in our fourth floor and really overseeing that part of our business to overseeing our live shows and our website. And she's like taught herself how to code and do all these incredible things. And I think it's been fun, right? Like, I think during this time when we're all kind of stuck and feeling like we can't create a lot of change, I think, you know, being able to create change and meaningful change at work is one of the things that makes me feel like everything is going to be okay, and that we're an innovative and amazing society that will, you know, get past this and figure things out and find solutions. And so there's something really beautiful that in the day-to-day, I'm watching my team really create meaningful change and solutions using innovation. So I'm very proud of them. And they don't need me to be proud of them. Let's be very clear. Like, they're brilliant, brilliant humans. And I just feel very lucky to be in the boat with them going through this crazy, crazy time. Hmm.
That was really beautiful about this idea of a lot of uncertainty, a lot of difficulty, but showing up, making progress in whatever way that we can move things forward and have ripple effects bigger than what we can see.
Yeah, I mean, I look at, you know, everything that was happening in New York with the protests, and I look at the conversation that happened among our team and us being like, you know what, we aren't doing enough. We aren't living up to our own mission and our own, you know, value system. And I watched the team put together, you know, a curation with Coco and Breezy of 10 Black owned businesses. I watched them go out and get a sponsorship, you know, partnership deal with American Express, so those businesses could be in the store for free through holiday. I watched like them actually take an impactful thing that was happening and turn it into action. And I think that's the power of a startup. That's why you fund young businesses. That's why you get behind people who are innovative and creative, but are actually action-oriented and are going to do things, because this is how we change the world. This is how we make beautiful things. And it's a group of people that are empowered to do that, that really will change the world and change the way we see things. And it's not just about making a commitment to, you know, showing more diverse founders or, you know, doing X, Y, and Z. It's putting your money where your mouth is and your time, you know, towards those things and actually changing them. And when I get to watch that, you know, when I get to watch a team realize and admit that they have not, you know, we have not done enough, and then to jump into it and try and change it. I mean, that's amazing. It's amazing to see. And that's what I want to be a part of. That's why I don't really sleep and I work 100 hours a week, because I really, really love those moments. They're beautiful. Sorry, I'm getting all emotional about my team today. They're blowing my socks off every time.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times the leaders get a lot of the credit and not the team. So I love how you're shining such a light on the team.
I get to talk about what they do. Like, that's my job, to amplify the amazing things that they create. But I really don't think that we have a culture within show fields, especially since COVID, of there being any star or there being any person, you know, that is responsible for the success of the company. It's going to take all of us to, you know, keep this alive and to live to see another like great year of retail, which, you know, I hope 2021 will be. It's not going to be one person that's going to save this company and this idea. It's going to be a team of people that figure out how to make it a successful year in spite of everything that's happening.
Do the best we can each day.
And yeah, exactly.
Even if it's 100 hours a week. So you mentioned this idea of like owning your superpower, picking mm-hmm. the right team, being adaptable. Mm-hmm. You know, and you also talked about investing into the ecosystem and kind of the community and stuff. I'm sure you get a lot of pick your brain types of moments, but what do you typically like to say to people that are, yeah, trying to think about how can they maximize their potential? How can they, you know, work on amazing projects and work with world-class people like you've done?
I think it's about showing your curiosity. I think that if you really want to get on the side of somebody that you want to work with, that you want to learn from, that you want to know, it's about being curious and coming with your curiosity to the table. I love like when people reach out and want to be part of Showfields, if they come with a question, if they come with a statement about something that we're doing and want to know why. And I think that some of the most interesting people I know in the world are always game for an incredible conversation. And so I've found that when I go with genuine curiosity about what they're building, what they're doing, how I can help, and I get to speak to them about the things that they're passionate about, that's how real connections formed. Whether that connection is I'm applying for a job, or that connection is I'm looking to see if I want to invest in that company, or if the connection is that I want that person to be part of my community because I find them interesting. I think people too often come with just a pitch of who they are, and a pitch is great, but there are hundreds of different pitches out there. I think you have to come with a pitch and a genuine interest in conversation. Like, those are when things just, you know, fly off the rails and I want to work with someone and I want to hang out with them, because curiosity is something that can't be taught, and curious people really change the world, and they really innovate, and they ask the right questions, and they try and figure out the right solutions. And I always think that being in a startup is running up against 100 walls a day and not panicking, just figuring out a way around or over. And curious people like will hit the wall and not have this reaction of like, oh my God, everything's ending. They'll be like, there's a wall here. I bet I can figure out the fastest and best way to get around it or over it. And so I think like, if you want to work with people that are innovative and problem solvers, like approaching them as an innovative problem solver is a really cool way to start that conversation.
Amazing. So we talked about a lot of things here. Is there anything else you think that we missed?
No, listen, I think it's a hard year. And so the only other thing I would say to everybody in this business right now is be easy on yourself. Like, I think a lot of people, especially if you're out of work or between gigs right now, it's super easy to, you know, feel terrible about that. But that is what's happening in the world right now. And it's not a reflection of you or your talent or your ability in this world. And I promise that if you get the job tomorrow, or if you change roles into what you think is going to be the dream role, it's just a new set of circumstances and a new set of problems for you to solve. So I think right now, the only advice that I have for people that are maybe looking to get a job or change their job and something's not working in this current situation, approach right now as an innovative problem solver in the same way you would in your job. I'm really excited a year from now to see, you know, the emails that are coming in from people being like, hey, listen, I lost my job a year ago. And so like, I was always really passionate about photography. So I fixed up an old RV and I drove across the country. I took 200 photos and I submitted them to National Geographic. They didn't get accepted, but what a great year. I would love to come innovate with you at Schofield. You know what I mean? Like, don't just sit back and think this is not just another way and time in which you can do crazy things and amazing things. Like, now more than ever, the world needs people to go out and you know, follow their passion and do great stuff, even if it's not the traditional path we all thought it was going to be.
So as they go out and off into the world and make things happen, if they want to make a pit stop at Schofields along the way, where can they do that? I know there's curations going on a regular basis.
Yeah, so we have our location in New York City at 11 Bond Street is open again. We are opening Miami at 530 Lincoln Road later this year. And you can always shop all of our incredible brands on Schofields.com. And then if you go out in the world and you happen to create a beautiful, beautiful company and you need funding, you can always go to the fund.vc and apply there to have your company looked at by the fund. So lots of ways to interact and to work together. And, you know, I'm also always game for questions. So please feel free to reach out via LinkedIn or any other way. And if I can get to them, I will.
Well, you got to me, and that really matters. So thank you so much, Katie. Really appreciate it.
David, it's always so lovely to see you. And as I was saying to you before we hit record, like, it's so nice to see a friendly face and to finally have a moment to connect with you.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Katie.
Hey, friend. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Wanted to also let you know about my monthly newsletter called One Email Away, where I fundamentally believe that we are all one email away from new opportunities. And if there's a way that I could potentially help you to connect with other people, I would love to do that. So one email away, you can sign up for my newsletter on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. You can also see the one email away section, but just want to take this moment to say thank you for listening to this episode. Really excited for us to build and grow our portfolio careers together.